Okay, so welcome back to the systems management track. We now have Jos with us, and Jos will give us guidance on RPM packages and how to build repositories. Welcome, Jos.
Okay. Yeah, okay, it's working. I will talk to you about RPM packages and what I call the repository jungle and how you can survive it if you at least see there as a threat in that. A few things about myself. I'm a Unix user, a very old-fashioned Unix user since 1982, and I've in fact exclusively worked in the Unix and also open source and Linux world the last decades. All that time, I never had a Windows PC on my desktop, and I'm proud to be not a Windows user. I have my own company since about 17, 18 years. I did kernel code at the firewall stuff in Linux in the late 90s. And I did, in my company, did my own RHEL rebuilds, complete rebuilds of Red Hat Enterprise Linux like CentOS in the last decade. My company does all kinds of consulting and software development. Well, that's common stuff. About the outline of what I will talk about this half hour. RPM packages and YUM repositories are the basics. And also, my experience is in the field of Red Hat Enterprise Linux and Fedora, so that will be the context. And, of course, the clones like CentOS and so on. And Scientific Linux. I think the concepts I will tell you about are equally applicable to say SUSE or Debian, other package management systems and other distributions. They have probably the same problems. I will tell you about the potential problems there are, if you think there's a problem for you at least. Especially in a corporate environment where you want to have a lot of systems updated and that kind of things. I will show you a few nightmares that you can see in third-party packages especially. And I will tell you what you could do to work around those problems. Okay, what can go wrong if you install a RPM package of a third party that's not in some way trustable? Well, trustable is maybe the bad word. It's not a bit of bad intention, but that's just badly packaged. There might be some files installed that are not included in the package. We'll see examples later on too. So you can imagine, you can think of packages that are, for example, copied in the post-install script. So otherwise, of course, an RPM package has administrated its own files, but yeah, if you do something worse at the end, then they are not packaged anymore. An RPM package might change existing files. For example, if a package thinks that it's wise to say change system defaults in etc page p.ini or something like that, well, yeah, you don't know about it, and it just does the things it wants to do. Also, it might include files that may conflict with files in the distribution. You might not see that at first glance. Normally, if a package conflicts with a file, of course, it won't install. It says, well, it's a conflicting package and I don't install it. But if you, for example, install a third party package before another package, then the package might install fine, and then when you want to install another regular package of your distribution, and it just fails and said, well, I'm conflicting with your third-party package. That's not what you want. That's why a distribution is composed as a complete thing, that without any conflicts, unless things are meant to be in conflict in the sense of multiple choices and so on. Packages may provide things that are also in the distribution, like shared libraries that a package includes in a private directory, while the distribution offers them in a public directory, but they might still be seen by the RPM system, by the repository as being in your package. And of course, config files might not be marked in the right way. Packages might not comply with the file system hierarchy standards, so that things end up in a wrong spot on your file system. Especially, also, packages may not be in line with the distribution standards, whether, for example, you use System 5 init or systemd or that kind of things. Some packages are really released only once for multiple distributions, like both for OpenSUSE and Fedora or things like that. And yeah, of course, that can't be the right thing to do, because a package should be specifically built at least for a certain distribution. The package itself might support multiple distributions, the spec file in the case of RPM, but the binary usually should be for one distribution. One of the biggest problems for third-party packages is the script files that they include, the pre- and post-install and uninstall scripts. They run as root, and they might be badly written. And especially, this is one of the worst things, the post-install scripts are usually huge, sometimes even thousands or more lines of code, and most normal RPMs have quite small post-install scripts, or even no post-install script. A package might add their own yum repository without saying you it will do so. Like it will just add a file to etc yum.repo.d. It might even install its own RPM GPG keys. This can, by the way, also be quite valid if a package is meant to be to do so. For example, you have a repository called EPEL, the extra packages for Enterprise Linux, which are Fedora rebuilds of Fedora packages for RHEL. Yeah, and that package is specifically meant to add a repository. Yeah, okay, if you know this and it's valid, then it's okay. Okay, now about some nightmares that you might see. This is an old example, but it's unbeatable in stupidness, let's say in that way. So I can't, I should show it to you. Things might have been improved. It's about 2008, I think. An RPM installing a specific SCSI driver thing from Oracle, multi-path SCSI support, which was in the kernel at that time, in the standard Linux kernel too, but for some reason Oracle required you to install their package. What the package did was just move away GCC, of course not in a legal way, but in the post-install script, so that you couldn't compile anything anymore in your system, except for their own driver with a specific GCC compiler they wanted to use. So everything else failed after that. They moved it away from user bin GCC to something like user bin GCC.old or so. So if you installed or upgrade their package multiple times, then you lost your C compiler completely. It was not even easily recoverable. Well, I think the easiest lesson to learn from such a package is, yeah, never expect any sanity in third-party packages, because you have no idea who ever made such a package and what he did and why. Maybe even not especially from very large companies with a lot of experts in. I'm quite sure that Oracle has a lot of real Linux experts, but they are not used to build these packages. And one of the things I always do since then is, and yeah, I did it even before, I think, but it's just analyze the pre- and post-install scripts if I install third-party packages, and see if I can't find any very strange things in it. And then you would have recognized this problem before. Okay, a more recent example, and it's less worse, luckily, is how Google distributes their Chrome browser. For that reason, I'm still using Chromium. There are other reasons for that too, but the Google Chrome RPM is not really good, a good example of a nice RPM. This example is from March this year. I didn't look at the latest versions during the past 2 months, but I'm not sure. I don't think a lot of things will have been changed. First of all, if you download RPM, it has a strange name. It just called all the same whenever you download it. So it's quite handy that your RPM does not show any version or whatever. That makes things so much easier for system administrators. They just call it always a stable current version. That's not what I expect from an RPM. I don't see a real reason for doing this. It also silently installs your own YUM repo file. For using the Google Chrome repository for the rest of the time. That can be valid, but it would be so nice that file, which is just a YUM repo file somewhere on your file system, would be included in the package. But what they do is they install such a repo file in the post-install script. And they do that for OpenSUSE and Fedora and whatever distribution, all in a different way, so they have to do it, at least they think so probably, in the post-install script. They also do their own GPG key, and just some statistics. The package installs 20 files that are not in the package, and they, of course, install that in the post-install script. They just move away some things, even really static files like icons or other things, they just not include them in the package, but somewhere on the file system, and then they move them in the post-install script. Okay, so more things about Chrome. If you look at the dependencies, the package has only a subset of the real dependencies. The package has 20 dependencies, to be more precise, and if you rebuild the same binaries and yet just let RPM calculate all the dependencies of all the runtime libraries used and so on, RPM will find 93 dependencies. So, and to be sure that RPM doesn't see strange things that were not there, I just removed one of the libraries that those new dependencies listed. And, of course, Chrome just failed to start then. So, for some reason, they leave out 73, the majority of all dependencies from their package. They also installed some files in user local, which is a violation of the file system hierarchy standard for packages. And to do all those things, they need 923 lines of code in the post-install script. And they do all strange things in that script, like moving files through the file system that an RPM script should never do. They have also several unused functions, and what was the most scary thing is that in an older version, so not the version of March, but some version before, I found a statement like rm-rf/$f. And yeah, I always think, well, what happens if $f accidentally is the empty string? Yeah, okay. If I code these kind of things in root scripts, I always tend to be to add a colon dash and so on, not existing or something like that. This is really scary code. Luckily, this statement was in a function that was never used, but okay, they had it there, and they seemed to throw away something that $f was a whole subdirectory of something very deep in the file system. But really, I don't like doing those things as root on my file on my system. Google seems to I don't think it's on purpose, but for some reason, they try to hide their repository because it's not even browsable. If you look at the repository, this is the repository that you can find in the repo file. It's not browsable, so you can't even list / repo data. Of course, the repository has to be accessible by YUM, so at least we know then that this file should be accessible, and in this file, the repo md.xml, you can find the real path names, and so you can find back your stuff, of course, but why not just have this browsable by their web server? That would make things also easier to inspect and download yourself and so on. So far for Google. And Google also has many experts on Linux. We all know that. I'm pretty sure about that. But why they make this RPM so ugly, I don't know. Okay, these were examples from third-party, let's say, proprietary stuff. Well, Chrome is not really proprietary, but partly it is. So, but at least third-party vendors that are not a community repository. The problems are not really limited to that kind of software. There are several community repositories existing. In the Fedora and Red Hat scene, I already mentioned things like EPEL, which is the port for Fedora packages to Red Hat Enterprise Linux for some Fedora packages that are not included there. The all kinds of packages partly containing proprietary software or patented software like MP3 and that kind of stuff. So there are a lot of repositories for additional stuff also in the Fedora world and probably also in all other worlds. In general, you can say that those repositories have a better quality than say the commercial packages like from Oracle or whatever. There just is a community working on it and they do peer reviews and that kind of stuff. So it's in general better. Although, yeah, dependency problems, conflicts with the standard distribution and so on, that are the biggest problems in those repositories, not the 1,000 lines of post-install script. If I look at my own experience, I would rate the repositories in this order of trustability. And as I say below, this is really not an in-depth analysis of a lot of statistics and stuff, but just my experiences using these repositories. And I say, well, EPEL is in general very trustable because that's a real community that does their rebuilds of Fedora packages for Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and it's the same environment more or less. So, yeah, they do the dependency stuff quite well, and the packages itself are in fact just Fedora packages. So they have the whole Fedora quality control already in there. So that's quite good. And then you have also two major repositories for the Fedora and Red Hat world: RPM Fusion and RPM Forge. And yeah, of these two, at least I had quite some problems with RPM Forge dependencies and including stuff that was already in normal packages and that kind of things. So there are some problems with these repositories too. Well, what to do with it? How to handle these problems? First of all, know your repositories. As I said, if a package just adds an own repository, maybe in a post-install script and so on, yeah, you can just see those repositories and say, well, let's at least do a YUM repo list, which is a YUM subset command that lists all your repositories so that you can see if something is added maybe after installing a package. You can also restrict the package set per repository, so What in general added repositories by packages don't do is just limit the packages that are available in that repository explicitly. So in this case, if you have a foo bar repository, you can say include packages is foo comma bar, and then only those two packages are taken from that repository. So if that repository ever have all kinds of other packages, they won't take them. And especially for large repositories like RPM Fusion, RPM Forge, and so on, it's very handy to decide yourself what kind of packages you want to get from that repository. And if ever packages are pulled in some way from that repository that you don't want, then you at least will see it, and Yum will refuse to do so. So you can limit the things in the repository. Usually, only binary packages are provided. One of the things that would be very handy if, for example, Google Chrome or whatever provides a package also provides a source RPM, and I don't mean in this sense the RPM with the source code and that's built and so on, because that's probably the reason they don't provide sources, because they don't want to do so. Okay, that's fine, but at least you can build RPM from binaries. So you could just include some source RPM that takes some binary tarball as a source and do all the things you want to do, and developers then can enhance their packages and maybe send their stuff back to the vendor and improve the packages that way. And RPM also has a nice feature of no source RPMs that you can specify that certain sources are not included in the source RPM. So if you don't want to distribute the tarballs via that RPM, you are even able to do so too. Okay, you're a bit running in time, so out of time. So try to be. I will try to do this a bit faster. But you can build your own packages from binary sources, as I said. If the vendor doesn't provide it, you can do it yourself. You do just download a tarball. If a vendor provides a tarball, specify that as a source. If you want, you can just exclude that source from the source RPM so that you can redistribute that source RPM, or that's called no source RPM in fact by RPM afterwards. Then you can redistribute that source RPM to others without violating any legal thing, because you're not distributing any binary stuff, only your packaging. In that case, you can also specify an architecture and operating system, but that's just to avoid accidentally building that packages for another architecture or so. If you want to do so, then sometimes a vendor has a sort of install script in the tarball. Yeah, you can just install that with here input or something like that. Fix the tree if they put files in the wrong space or in the wrong place, and you can generate it in the correct environment. Always use mock in the Fedora and Red Hat world for generating packages in a specific limited environment, and it all works fine, and you just rebuild it for every Fedora or RHEL release, and you assure that all the dependencies are correct. Of course, if you want to do this, this is a pretty pretty hard piece of work sometimes. You have to check for updates yourself, and you have to rebuild your packages then. And sometimes, if a vendor includes install scripts in the tarballs, they change every release. For example, if you do that for, I did that for Adobe Acrobat Reader, and it's a huge package, and you have to do quite some work to make that nice for your RPM. Okay, multi-architecture. Well, what I always do is I include multiple architectures in one spec file, both the 32 and 64-bit version, and I unpack the right source, in fact, binary tarball, in the spec file. So if the architecture is a 32-bit, then I unpack the source 0, and if the architecture is a 64-bit, I unpack source 1. And so you can have one nice source RPM that just works for both 32 and 64-bit. You can even repackage an RPM. You just use the RPM that the vendor provides, and that's wrong, in your opinion at least. You just include that as source zero, and you don't unpack that RPM, because RPM setup, the percent setup macro doesn't handle this RPM unpacking. You do that manually by RPM to CPIO, and yeah, it will be unpacked, and you just put the files at the right spot where you want them. Okay, what's the conclusion of all this? If you use third-party RPM, say RPMs not provided by your distribution, by the project that you use, well, it can be quite easy. You can just easily install Chrome RPMs or whatever, and it usually works, but it can be quite dangerous. And if you want to maintain, for example, a stable network of Linux systems, yeah, you might run into all kinds of interesting problems. And that makes it quite messy for a lot of people. If you build your own RPMs, rebuild their RPM or rebuild from a tarball or whatever, that can be quite challenging and quite interesting something to do, sometimes to do. But it may be a lot of work for some packages. Even for Chrome, it's not an easy job because it needs all kinds of strange things. People think you're crazy that you have to, they think you say, okay, you can just use the Chrome RPMs. Why for God's sake do you do this? But you can say, well, it's much safer what I do, and I have quite some fun in doing that, and I'm quite sure that I have a maintainable environment. So this was it, and any short questions left?
Seems to be as if we have RPM experts around here, so no questions raise up.
Okay.
I have one question.
Yeah. Okay.
You showed in the specifying include PKGS in the repo files to just say okay, install foo and bar and nothing else from the repository. Will still yumsearch show all packages that are in the repository or only those two that are mentioned on the configuration line?
I'm not sure about that, I have to say.
We have to test it.
Yeah, I have to test it. But it will not certainly not install them.
No, just for searching to look what else is in the repository and what might be needed for those two packages, for example.
I never tried that.
Okay.
Okay. No questions?
So no further packages, okay?
Okay.
So thank you, Jos, for showing us RPM and packages and repositories.